Hey there, Mike Stelzner coming to you with a fascinating update you might not be familiar with. Did you know that Social Media Examiner can deliver all the marketing training, news, and trends, insights that you need into your inbox 3 days a week when you sign up for our newsletter, and it's completely free? Simply visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates and take your marketing to the next level.
Welcome to the Marketing Agency Show, where we explore solutions to the biggest challenges faced by agencies.
Hey, y'all. Thank you so much for joining me for the Marketing Agency Show, brought to you by Social Media Examiner. I'm your host, Brooke Sellis, and this is the show for agency owners and agency marketers. We explore the topics that no one else is talking about, so pull up a seat to the table and let's have a great conversation. Today, I'll be joined by 20-year marketing veteran, Laura Click. Also, if you're new to this podcast, be sure to follow the show so you don't miss any of our future content. Let's transition over to this week's guest, Laura.
To help explore the frontier of working at and growing agencies, here is this week's expert guide.
Hey, everybody. Today, I am super excited to be joined by Laura Click. Laura is a brand strategist, a speaker, a podcaster, and a writer. In her work, she holds up a mirror to help people and organizations see their own brilliance. Who doesn't love that? She's also the CEO of Blue Kite in Nashville. Nashville. I was trying to pull out my Southern accent there for you, Laura. A Nashville-based brand strategy consultancy that helps mission-focused organizations stand out from the competition and tell their stories better. Since starting the company in 2010, Blue Kite has helped more than 70 organizations from across the country strengthen their branding and marketing so they can reach new heights. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Brooke. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Very excited to chat with you. And I do, my Southern does come out sometimes, so fair warning.
Listen, it happens to me too. So I don't normally have an accent, but the more I talk to people with them, I naturally start to pick it up. So you're not alone in that.
That's what my husband says. He's like, I can always tell when you've been talking to your grandmother because you're like, well, I just talked to grand. So sorry if it comes
join
out.
The club. Today you're a Southerner. Just come right on down to Nashville. Here we go.
Here we go. So first questions first, what made you decide to jump into the crazy world of agency ownership?
You know, I think probably like most entrepreneurs, I wanted the freedom and flexibility that comes with that, right? And to be honest, I don't know that I really wanted to start an agency, but I honestly couldn't think of another business to start. So I was doing some consulting on the side. I had a government job and kept getting asked to speak. And it was in the early days of social media. So people were constantly asking me to help them. And so it just kind of became a natural thing. But if I were to say the real impetus for me is that I wanted to find the culture that was lacking at every other place I worked. So I wanted to create the kind of business and organizational culture that was lacking in every other work environment I had. I went from agency to nonprofit to government, and I just always thought there was a better way to do work. So really, Blue Kite is, we are a branding company, but really we're about making the world a better place to do great work. And if that can start with me and our organization, hopefully that creates a ripple effect.
Ugh, I love that. Making the world a better place to do work. Like, wouldn't it be nice if everybody had that attitude? Like, I don't even think we would need this show, actually.
That's right. There we go. I know. Like, work shouldn't have to be so terrible. So can we can we make it fun? Can we make it enjoyable? Can we show up doing the work that we really love to do with people we really want to work with? So I don't know. That's my utopian society that I'd like to live in, but we'll do our little bit one day, one client at a time.
I'm there. I'm moving in. So what kinds of clients do you serve? I'm assuming they also are very nice people, but tell us a little bit more about what kind of clients you serve.
I'm so glad you said that. So I will say even though my business has changed a lot, the thing I've said from day one is we work with people we enjoy and businesses we believe in. So that kind of gives you a really broad scope of what our threshold is for who we work with. So if you clear those barriers, that's a good sign. But when I think more about industry focus and size, we are doing a lot more healthcare work lately. So we've worked with mental health, we've worked with specialty hospitals, smaller like acupuncture clinics. So a lot in that kind of vein. I'm doing some tourism work right now, which has been really fun for us. And then a lot of B2B work. That's always been bread and butter for us at Blue Kite. But we kind of run the gamut between, last year we launched a solopreneur, like a personal brand, all the way up to large scale organizations. So we are able to right size our services depending on the size of the company. It's more about, are you doing really great work that matters and need help telling your story? Then we can help you do that.
Yeah, that's so needed in our world, whether you're nice or not.
That's right.
So let's talk about our topic today, which is, like, every time I see the word pivot, by the way, I think we talked about this, like, I picture like the Ross Geller from Friends, like, pivot situation where they're trying to move the couch upstairs. But we're going to talk about, like, how do you do the pivot in your agency, right? Like, we started pivoting a few years ago and we're rounding off the pivot now, but like, it happens, right? At a certain age, at a certain time, maybe based on what you want to do, maybe based on outside factors and not necessarily your choice, you have to pivot and shift your focus to servicing something else, someone else, doing it differently, whatever that means. So can you describe for our audience the challenges that you faced or that you've seen your clients face that led to a pivotal moment when somebody had to pivot?
I wasn't thinking about the Friends reference, but now I will every time I hear it. So thank you for that visual reference. You know, the pivot for me was more of a personal desire and a personal need. So I started Blue Kite as a side hustle in 2010 and took it full time in 2012 and had been going at it for several years, but had a whole bunch of personal stuff happened in my life, had some health issues. My husband and I both had some health issues. We struggled to have children, went through IVF. I'm very open about that journey. And so we kind of kept getting pummeled by personal stuff that I had to downscale my business a bit just to kind of keep my head above water. I mean, there were times I even thought about throwing in the towel. And then I realized when I was pregnant with my son that no one's going to hire a 6-month pregnant person. So even though that shouldn't be a thing, it's a thing. So the reality is I probably couldn't get a job. So I hung in there. But through all of the personal turmoil, I had also been struggling with falling out of love with my business. I kind of felt like I had created my own mousetrap. You start out saying yes to everybody and everything, and I had, and we were spread mile wide and an inch deep. We were doing all this kind of work, and I really wasn't loving it anymore. It really caused me to think about, well, what is it that I like to do? And I had to almost remind myself that, hey, I'm in charge. I'm steering the ship. I can shift the direction. And sometimes it's real easy to forget that. So that was really the reason for the pivot for me, is more about, how do I make my work more joyful? How do I do work that is more aligned with my skills and giftings? And it took a lot of time and thinking and trial and error to figure it out. But when I looked back over my career and my work, it was always in brand strategy and messaging and brand development that has always been the part I loved. So it was kind of hiding in plain sight. And so made the decision to go all in on that, as opposed to saying, hey, we are your full digital marketing department. We can do everything for you. Now it's like, no, we only do this thing. And we're really, really good at it.
Yeah. I love that you're being honest and vulnerable about, like, falling out of love with your business, because I think most of us, if not all of us, have been there. It's happened for me. We had Andy Crestedina on. If you haven't listened to his episode, go back, way back, and listen to it, because he's well known for all of the content and SEO things that he does. But he and I talked about the struggle of burnout and what happens when you fall out of love with your business, right? So what was, like, the moment or the factor, like, what was the catalyst that made you realize, A, that the pivot was necessary, which you kind of covered, but also, like, and I realized that now I need to change my services to focus on branding, right? So, like, how did you go from, like, the thinking to the doing in that moment?
I don't think there was a singular moment. It was kind of a progression over time. And honestly, I was not bold or brave enough to go all in. I didn't put my chips all in out of the gate. Like, we're throwing everything out the door. We're going all in on this. We continued to serve some ongoing retainer clients doing content marketing and email and social and all these things. And my hope was to start building up this brand practice while having those. And eventually we would let those clients go. And my hand was actually forced. It was kind of a really interesting thing. Over time, we had some client attrition that then led to, well, I didn't have to let them go. They let themselves go. A client got acquired. So the acquiring company decided to end our contract. We had another one that we raised their rates for the first time in 5 or 6 years, and they didn't want to continue with us after that. So like we had several things over a period of months that they kind of all went away. And so I was really at this pivotal moment of, okay, well, I was worried about how do I let go of these clients when they just kind of found their own way out. And it was a really scary time in my business, but because it cleared the deck, it allowed me to go all in on brand services. And the wild thing is I replaced, like I had all this revenue that I lost and I was able to replace it all in about 2 to 3 weeks, all doing brand work. So, and I can't take credit. I mean, a person of faith, there's definitely, I would call it a God thing. There's some divine intervention at play, but it was really interesting to me that once I let go of the old model, it really created space for the new one to happen. And I had been kind of working on that for probably a year or two and wasn't getting any traction with how I was trying to deliver the new services. But once the deck was cleared, you kind of had to go all in. I had to go all in at that point.
Right. And I love that you're saying like, hey, like it was scary. It was hard. It was, you know, I was in a really vulnerable position because I've been hearing that common thread through a lot of these interviews too. It's like, you know, we cut 50% of our clients, but over the next 12 months, we grew by 250%, right? So it's like, I'm trying to think of how to say it concisely that isn't cliche, but this is cliche. I'm going to say it anyway, but like the big risks equal big reward, right? And sometimes it's taking that leap of faith and saying like, hey, you know, I know this is what's best and whatever happens, happens. But in your situation, 2 or 3 days is crazy, by the way. That's amazing.
2 to 3 weeks, not 2 to 3 days. That would have been,
But still, that's even crazy, though.
That's even miraculous. But,
but 2 to 3 weeks, miraculous. I mean, that's still amazing. So it was like, yeah, like you made the right move in this universe and you were rewarded for that risk, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Did you have to communicate any of the changes? Like some of those clients like saw themselves out, right? But for your existing clients, the ones that stuck around, did you have to communicate these changes to those clients? And if you did, how did they handle the news?
To be completely transparent, that wiped my deck of my ongoing client base completely. So we were like down to zero.
Oh, wow.
Like there came an inflection point where like it was just a short few month window of time where everything had kind of cleared out. So I didn't have that. Hi, clients, we're shifting our services because we didn't really have them to tell. I don't know that our pivot was so much of a pivot as it was a narrowing. So it honestly feels like a more focused look at what I've been doing this whole time. You know, we all need outside experts. If I had hired my own outside expert, they probably would have shown me that, you know, that it was there all along. I just didn't see it. And so we didn't have that client base to go to and say, hey, we've changed. But, you know, I don't see it as a huge change. We were always offering those services. It was now, but it's more of this is all we do and a real focus in that area.
Yeah. I think another thing that is often said on this show from all of the people who I've interviewed is like, here's another cliche saying, the riches are in the niches, right? Like scaling down, like focusing down into what you do best, which is where I'm trying to pivot right now. It's hard. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of like being honest with yourself. It takes a lot of, like you're saying, like outside voices. We've hired a consultant more recently to come in and kind of say like, yes, you should be pivoting here because blah, 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 blah. Because what if they came in and were like, oh, you want to pivot here, but this is not my recommendation, right? So there's so many little nuanced factors that go into pivoting or narrowing or niching down or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, so let's keep diving in. Team-wise or yourself-wise, like if you had a team, if it was just yourself, what steps did you take to ensure that they or you were on board with this whole new way of delivering this service? Obviously, you were great at delivering the service. You've done the service before, but like now you're throwing other stuff out. Did you have to like go change the website? Did you have to change templates, processes, procedures, all that stuff?
Yes. The short answer, yes. You know, the interesting thing is, so I had already redone our branding and our website. So if you see behind me, this isn't actually our logo, but it's my sister painted that. But it says our original name was Blue Kite Marketing. And so I dropped the marketing out of our name. So we're not getting confused that we offer marketing services. I mean, yes, branding is still in that realm, but I didn't want people to think because of the name, like we're here to help you with all of these things that we don't do anymore. So we're just Blue Kite. So I had, prior to going all in on this, we had just rebranded a year prior and had redone the website. So that was already in play. So it was continuing to have these clients while also trying to build up this new practice. And I thought, like, again, in a perfect world, I'll build up this client practice and then let these other ones go. And it didn't quite happen like that. But yes, did have to redo all of our marketing assets, all of our branding, and, you know, really focus in on that, because if we're really leaning into branding services, we need to make sure our brand is shored up. We have to practice what we preach. So we did take the time to invest in that. As far as team, at the time, you know, part of what this pivot or narrowing, as we want to call it, I didn't have a team. So I've always been a small shop. I've only ever had either a couple of employees and a handful of contractors that I bring in. And at the time, I didn't have either, because I had just getting off this downshifting from having kids and kind of starting to build back up. So I didn't have the problem of getting the team on board. The team was me. So it was more about me getting all of my materials, getting all of my processes changed. It's still something that we're evolving as we go, as we get better at it and do more of it. Like anything, your processes improve, your templates, your materials, all of it improve over time. But all of those things had to be done. It's an ongoing work in progress, if you will.
Always. There's always something to change or update or improve upon, et cetera. So let's talk about the resources. So in terms of your resources, like taking into, let's just call resources like technology, your tech stack, staffing, if you do have team members now or contractors now, and budgets. How did all of those come into play as you were growing, and what's in place now? Like, is there anything you're willing to share outright as far as like a technology or a tool or a budget strategy that you're willing to share with our listeners?
You know, it's interesting because making this shift, we honestly, our tech stack probably got smaller. There were less tools and things that we needed because we were moving more into, I don't want to say just like straight up consulting, but kind of a lot of our work is strategy driven and messaging driven. And so to do that work, we don't need all of the tools that you would if you're managing social media, for example. So we still have tools and things that we use, but it's not as tech heavy as it would be in other practices and in the marketing space. So that actually was some sloughing off that we could do, right? And so we've gone through and go, do we need this? And cut a lot of our subscriptions to things because we quite frankly didn't need them anymore. And so I don't know that I have a huge like tech stack recommendations. You know, there's lots of things that we use. We still use Slack and Asana. Now there's AI tools. And so we're playing with, you know, a lot of that right now too. But I don't feel that we have to have all of the other robust materials that we did when we were doing more social media and content marketing, for example.
You just brought up a great point. There's so many conversations happening about artificial intelligence or AI right now. And there are literally, I feel like there's like 500 tools to spring up like every day. Are there any tools that you, AI tools specifically, that you're using right now that are helpful for the work that you do in branding? I'm just curious.
We primarily lean on ChatGPT, and we're kind of playing with how do we test out any AI tools for every piece of the process we do. And there's some ways where AI is really helpful and valuable. And then there's some ways it just falls completely apart. So,
yeah.
And granted, maybe I'm biased, but you know, there's a lot of tools. We do naming work, for example. So if a company needs a new name, we do the brainstorming and ideas after we've done a strategy on what are the new name options. There are oodles of tools out there for name development. I will tell you, every one of them I test, they come up with a bunch of junk, if you ask me. And so if you're looking for a free, cheap option, go for it. But you're not going to end up with something that's incredibly strategic. However, we do use ChatGPT in our brainstorming process. So what's really fun is thinking about, okay, we renamed a company last year, or not renamed, it was a startup. And so they needed a name out of the gate. And we use that tool a ton for going, okay, give me all of the synonyms to this word. Give me what this word means in these different languages. Now tell me, you know, so it was a really fast way to do research and get a lot of idea generation. It's not where you're going to get a fully fleshed out option, for example, but for brainstorming, we find it incredibly useful.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, it's such a game changer for brainstorming, right? Because I have like really super creative days. Most of the time, that's when I'm in the shower or driving or not in front of the computer where I can make the note, right? And then I have days where I'm like sitting here at the computer like, oh my gosh, how am I going to write about this subject again, right? And I think using an AI tool for brainstorming is so helpful. But to your point, like there's a lot of zhuzhing that happens. Like you can't just take what it gives you and throw it out there. It needs zhuzhing. I guess that's the only word.
Zhuzhing. I love it. We're going to say that. It needs some additional love and creative flair. I mean, you know, we use that at ChatGPT when we did this naming project and it helped us give us the foundational pieces we need to pull the idea together, but it did not spit out the winning name. We did a created name, but chat was super helpful in giving us all of the, like, we could just brainstorm faster. So instead of saying, okay, let's come up with 100 ideas, we could come up with hundreds of ideas very, very quickly. That's what's really game changing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would also say too, like if you have methodologies on how you do these things for your clients and branding, any large language model like ChatGPT could do this, but I used ChatGPT and we have this method that we use for our customer care clients. And I was like, I know there's a there, like there's a method here. Here's what we do. Here's how we do it. Like make the method for me, like make it sound like it's the Care Squared method and like put it into visuals and explain how it all goes together. And it did that for me, right? Like sometimes we're so in it, and I'm sure this happens all the time in branding. You're so in it. You've been spending hours thinking about it that you just can't see outside of that bubble. And it lets you get outside the bubble.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think many marketers listening is going to still make the case for you. You need a trusted guide. You still need someone who knows how to use the tools and who knows the frameworks and who knows how and what to ask it. I mean, I'm about to talk to an organization here in a little bit about a naming project. They need to rename an organization and they used some AI tools and they're telling me what they came out with. And I'm like,
it sounds like you used an AI tool.
It does. It's not great. It's not great. And so with some love or zhuzhing, you know, maybe you can get there. But I think it's still important to have strategy behind that. Anything you do is going to be that much stronger if you've got some really solid thinking behind it.
100%.
Did you know that we can deliver awesome marketing info directly into your inbox? Simply subscribe to our weekly newsletter that comes out 3 days a week. You won't miss any of the updates going on in the world of social marketing. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates.
Let's talk about how you measure the success of a pivot, right? Or narrowing or niching, whatever you want to call it. Whatever your vocabulary, your vernacular is. Were there any specific metrics or like moments, if it wasn't a metric, that gave you an indication that you were on the right track or that you were successful with your pivot?
I think the big one, which I kind of already mentioned, when you are able to go out and find new business really quickly was something else. I mean, that was a really good leading indicator that I was onto something, but then went on for the rest of that year. And that would have been 2022. Ended up having, it wasn't our best year in revenue, but close. And so that shift happened in about April of that year. So that was almost our best year in business. And that's only talking about 3/4 of the year, really. You know, so our revenue was up. Also, our profit margins were up. And so because of our delivery model changed, I was able to focus more on, you know, services that had a higher profit margin. And so it's not always about the top line for me. I mean, as I've gotten older and wiser and read some great books, huge fan of Profit First, if people haven't read that, it helped me focus on, you don't have to get as big if you can deliver services that are profitable. And this pivot for me has been a lot more profitable. My bottom line is better than when I was trying to do everything. And I did. I had to have all the tools and all of the people. And so my costs were a lot higher. My margins were a lot less. So this model, I would say my top line revenue has been better over the last 2 years. And also my bottom line has been better too. So to me, those are the numbers that matter most, right? Like,
yeah,
that's, we're in business. We have to think about the dollars and cents. And that's really been the hugest indicator of success from my standpoint.
Let's talk about profit margins for a second. So say if we have any people who are maybe new to being an agency owner, or maybe they're like doing the side hustle thing right now themselves, and they're thinking about taking that leap. Talk about profit margins, right? Just how do you look at those? How important are they? Describe them in the way that they make sense for you and your business. Like, you don't have to give us numbers, but like, just talk about the importance of them and why you found that like, oh, hey, if I finagle this and I do this, my profit margin's so much better. And this is how I should have been doing it all along.
Yeah. So it's what is your cost of delivering the service, whether that's from you or you've got employees or you've got contractors or to your point earlier, you've got a tech stack, you know, to deliver. I was delivering a lot of services that I was having to bring in extra supports for. So I'm paying contractors for these things. So when I was downsized and I'm the primary deliverer of services, it's what can I do? Because if I'm doing the work, my profit margin's higher. Now, granted, for growth, that doesn't work. So now I do have an employee and I'm focused on training and how do we make this model replicable? But when you're starting out, and honestly, even though I'm how many years, 12, 14 years in, starting, making this pivot felt like starting over 2 years ago. In a lot of ways, I feel like I have a brand new business. And so I would say, look at what is the cost of delivering the service and not just what is the top line, because it can sound really fun to go, here's this proposal for this amount of money. And we're not always thinking about what is the cost of delivering those services. So now I know which of the things that we deliver have our highest margins. And those are the things that we always want to lead with if we can, as opposed to selling things like a website's a great example. We have to bring in a designer and a developer and all of these different people to do it. And we do websites, but we, for us, only do websites if we've built the brand first that we've done. And that's where our money-making is, our profit drivers are really from brand strategy development, messaging, naming work, because that is all stuff that we do internally without external cost resources.
Yeah, I think that's such an important message because, you know, we as marketers, sometimes we get pushed to do it all. And then sometimes, especially when we're new, we want to say yes to it all. But what ends up happening is that you eat away at your margins because, like you were saying, you can't do everything yourself. And if you go listen to a past episode, Damian Popworth, he talks about founders, like agency owners like us coming in and just saying, oh, I'll do that work because it will cost less if I just do it. But ultimately doing that hurts your business, right? If you just continue on with that kind of mindset, obviously it's needed a little bit in the beginning, but it's so important whether you're, I think, pivoting or not to keep your margins in your line of sight. Like, how much am I making off of doing this thing? And if you know you're making, you know, 30% margins on most of your services, but then when you offer websites, you're only making 10, maybe you shouldn't offer doing websites anymore. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, or mark them up better or make sure you cost them out more. I mean, I would say the other piece of that is, you know, using, for us, we use Harvest. It's a time tracking tool.
Yeah, we use that.
Or gosh, I love Harvest. I've used them for, gosh, a decade or more. You know, even though we don't bill by the hour, we always track what it takes for us to do any project, because when we do that, it helps us do a better job of costing for future projects. And so, you know, it's real easy to think it's going to take X amount of time and it doesn't. So you over time get better at projecting what your time allocation is going to be. Also getting better at going, hey, let's always add in a little bit of wiggle room and like margin in there, because, you know, if you don't, you're going to, yes, a buffer. Yes, exactly. It's going to come back and bite you. So I would say, yes, like paying attention to tracking is a huge helper in terms of improving your bottom line on your projects moving forward too.
Yeah, I'll make sure we link Harvest in the show notes, which if you're listening, the show notes actually happen on YouTube. So run over to YouTube to the Social Media Examiner page, look for the Marketing Agency Show playlist, come to Laura Click's episode. And then down in those notes, I'll make sure we share Harvest, because like we were saying in the beginning, and when you start adding people, right, the amount of time it takes me to do something is going to be the amount of time it takes Laura to do something, is going to be the different amount of time that it takes Mike to do something, right? And we can all be experts and all be really good at what we do, and we're still not going to come out at the same time for getting like the same project done. So Harvest helps you tremendously understand where hours are being spent. It allows you to like show what budget is. If you're smart, you're building buffer in to the hours that you're giving to the team, because they will use every second you give them. And ultimately that's all to protect margins. So yeah, we'll make sure we list that in the show notes. Are you willing to share with us a mistake or a misstep that happened during this transition period and ultimately what you learned from that?
I don't know that it was a mistake, but definitely some faltering. I think it was, I had a lot of trial and error. So when I was making the realization I wanted to switch to brand strategy, brand building work, I had tried the idea of coming up with more offer-driven approach. So instead of like, we're going to do brand strategy like we're doing it now, it was, how do we have more of an offer, an online offer that people could buy? We were looking at doing an intensive model. So we were doing this kind of done in a day approach. How can we deliver a brand strategy through a one-day workshop? And I did a handful of those, but I was realizing really fast that what I was charging would require a significant amount of volume to make that approach fly. And so it sounded like a really great idea. I mean, there's a lot of people selling and coaching. I was in some coaching programs trying to sell. I kept trying to go with this like offer approach, and I didn't have the big enough list. I didn't have enough of a driver towards people going to my landing pages and offer. So I just didn't have the pipeline built in to make that work and the audience to make that work. And so what became clear to me is that I can't focus on really small companies who can only afford to do this intensive model, because A, it just wasn't going to be a sustainable approach. Now, what's interesting is we'll still offer that. Like, it's kind of a back pocket offering I have for folks. So we have folks come to us and say, hey, can you help us? But maybe they can't afford our full brand strategy offering. That's something that I'll pull out of my back pocket and say, hey, we actually did it last year for a solopreneur, a personal brand. He didn't need the full suite of services that we offer for brand strategy, but we could get there in a one-day workshop. So it's really great to kind of downsize our services, but it wasn't a great option for that to be the only thing that we delivered, because it wasn't financially sustainable to take that approach.
It was a pivot instead of your pivot.
Yes.
Now we're getting very meta.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, sometimes you have to try on a lot of shoes to find out what fits. And that was me trying on some shoes, and some painful lessons there. I mean, I spent a lot of time and energy building out all of these, you know, landing pages and email sequences and all, you know, trying to build the funnel up. And it wasn't there, but finally found our way to make it fly.
I love that. And it's not wasted, because you, like you said, you have it in your back pocket now as like a, hey, it's not within your budget or scope or whatever to do this now, but I could offer you this, right? So it's not a total waste. You're still using it. It's there. And hey, some revenue is better than no revenue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd rather, if there's someone we can help and we have to do it in a downscaled way, I'd much rather do that than try and turn folks away and send them somewhere else. So, you know, if you need something in the realm of brand work, I'm sure there's something that we can do to help you, you know? So it's just figuring out kind of at what level is appropriate for your business.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And it's also really good advice. Speaking of advice, what advice would you give to other agency owners who maybe facing similar rough patches, right? Like, how do you know when it's time to pivot? Maybe I've just built out this course. I've spent all this time building out the course. I built out the landing pages. I built out the promos. I built out the ads. And at what point do I get far into this project? Do I say, oof, maybe I need to pivot? Like, what advice would you give to somebody who might be stuck in that situation or scenario?
That's such a big question. I feel like there's so many ways I could answer it, because truly, you know, to your point, it's really hard to throw something out that you've spent a lot of time and energy on. But you have to, I think, take that serious look and go, is this working for me? So in the case of that offer approach I was trying, is this working for me? Well, you know, I sold a few of them, but to make that work, I would have to be selling more like a few of those a month, you know, at least. And so just, it became clear it wasn't sustainable. But I think for me, we talk a lot about success in terms of dollars and cents and the revenue piece and profit margins. But honestly, the taking stock of what do you like to do? And maybe it's not just you, if you've got a bigger team, like what is your team exceptionally good at? You know, I've said to a lot of people, we were good ish. And I say that, and Danielle on my team, big shout out to her. She's like, Laurie, we were better than good-ish. Like, I have really high standards, but you know, I feel like we were good at a lot of things in marketing, but we weren't truly great. I now can say we are truly great at brand development. We are truly great at that. And so I would say, what is your company exceptional at doing? What do you love to do? What lights you up? Because if you are falling out of love with your business, if you are not excited about the work, I mean, as business owners, we've got to be out there selling. We have to be out there, you know, attracting new clients. And if it's not exciting for you, it's really hard to make those sales. And so people can tell if you have enthusiasm for your own brand. And if you don't, then it might be a signal that something needs to change.
Yes. Also great advice. Like, that's such a great reason to say no to some of these things that come across your path, because like, it's not your bag. You know what I mean? Like, everybody wants to jump on to right now offering some sort of AI thing, you know? But if you're not excited and passionate about AI and you're just doing it because that's what everybody else is doing, like, don't. This too shall pass. We'll get past it. You don't have to have like some sort of AI tool or service in your pocket unless it's something that fits in with your big service now and it makes a lot of sense for you and you're passionate about it, right? Like, I just think sometimes saying no is really more important than saying yes.
100%. I mean, I think it's really hard to let go of things that, you know, turn revenue away. But when you say no to things that aren't aligned, I think it creates more space for things that are. I've seen that myself. And even stuff that I have done a proposal or thought maybe like, we'll just see. I learned that lesson last year. We took a client. I had a client that, quite frankly, we needed the revenue at the time. And so we said yes, but there wasn't good alignment there. And it was a bear. It was a terrible, difficult project. And so you pay for it. When you have that gut feeling that something isn't right and you ignore it, you pay for it. Now, granted, I don't regret it. It was good for revenue. It was good for a lot of lessons learned and how to do work better and how to vet clients. You know, it was one more thing to kind of go, okay, pay attention to those signals, pay attention to that gut feel, because it's trying to tell you something. You just need to listen. So yeah, it's so hard to do, but I now recognize the importance of it, because you'll we definitely paid for it in a very difficult client relationship. I hate that for everybody. It shouldn't be that way. Work should be, I always say that, you know, finding an agency partner is a lot like dating. You need to find someone who's a good fit. And it's not just about the skills and capabilities, but like, do you all genuinely like each other? Do you want to work together? Because if you don't have that synergy, it's just going to go terribly for everyone.
Yeah. I want you all to like pause here and rewind and let's listen to what Laura said. She said the revenue was good, but they paid in other ways. Right. And I think that's a really important piece of advice or a lesson that you're giving there, because it's true. Like sometimes you're like, oh man, I need to get back to homeostasis, and homeostasis means I need, you know, an extra $1,000 a month. So here comes this person who is willing to sign up for this service, who's not necessarily the right fit, but man, it's going to meet that $1,000 a month that I need. And you might pay in other ways. Like, it's a very difficult client. You know, it causes headaches or chaos among your team, right? With your team members. Maybe they don't show up at meetings, you know, like they just don't show up for the meeting and they still expect the results, but they're not there. So I think that, oh, I just really love that. You may get the revenue, but you can pay in other ways if you're really not aligning with your clients.
Yeah, I'm going to steal that. I think you said it more eloquently than I did, Brooke. So I'm going to, they may pay, but you will pay for it in other ways. So yes. It's not just about, I think it's a, oh gosh, that's a, you're giving me some good thought starters too, but it's like, I think we have to, when we're taking on a potential new client, is like, what, not to look at it selfishly, but what will this client bring me, right? So is it, revenue is certainly one thing, but like, is it going to be a good thing for our client roster? Is it going to give us the prestige that we need? Is it going to be a good fit? Is it going to be fun? Are we getting creative opportunities? So it's kind of like running each potential client through that litmus test of, let's just be real about what this client is going to bring to the table for us. And you hope it checks all the boxes, but if it doesn't, then you need to be really okay with, okay, this one may just be about revenue and we have to be okay with that if you're going to say yes to something like that.
I love that. Back in my another life, I was a nonprofit and we used to say people, right? Those were our assets, really bring you one of three things. It could be more than one, but time, treasure, or talent. So I was trying to figure out how to tie that to what you were just saying, like the treasure, right? If treasure is what you're looking for and you fill that spot, great, but it still may not go as well, right? But if somebody gives you talent, meaning maybe it is that logo or that prestige that you can put on your website, or maybe it's an industry that you want to break into, right? I love donuts. I would love to have a donut company. A donut company says, hey, Brooke, we want to work with you. That is talent, because I'm now going to learn how to do donut marketing. And I love and donuts.
And a lifetime supply of donuts, hopefully.
Yeah, like, you can pay me in donuts.
That's right.
But, you know, and then I was trying to think how to time, treasure, talent. How do we tie time in there? Like, obviously, you know, with the nonprofits, it's volunteer giving you their time, but maybe that's what the donut example is. Anyways, I digress. I'm getting over on the side. But yeah, there are different things that different clients are going to bring you, right? And whether it's time, treasure, talent, or something else, maybe try to find those fits that bring you all three, which is obviously the hardest, but two for sure. And if it's just treasure, like we were saying, it might not be all you want it to be.
Well, I guess it's not just what they will bring you, but what is it going to cost you?
Yes.
And so as you were talking, you know, the difficult client we had last year, it did bring us revenue, but it cost us a significant amount of time and emotional turmoil because they were someone who, it was just, they were really difficult. We had a lot of gaslighting. We had a lot of very difficult communication and difficult meetings. And so it was just an emotional drain. And so it cost us in creative energy. It cost us in time. So, you know, I guess maybe it's twofold. Look at what is the client going to bring you, but what is it going to cost me to take this client? So for some, is that it's going to cost me my ethics? You know, for me, there's certain companies that I would never take on as a client, right? Like I was the kid in high school who went to talk to elementary school students about not smoking. I would not work with a cigarette brand, for example. So like, there are things that would be against my ethics. So like it would cost me to take those clients on. So it's like, I think that's, what is it going to bring me? And then what is it going to cost me to say yes?
I love that. What is it going to cost me? Because they could cost you time, talent, treasure, right? Love that. See, now you're giving me advice.
This is it's a podcast and a consulting session.
Yes, so here we go. I love it. It's the perfect type of podcast episode. So let's talk about the pivot and how it's like, it's obviously totally changed the trajectory of your business. What do you think about the future? Are you going to stay here? Is there another pivot coming? Are you open to another pivot? Like, give me all the goods when it comes to where you're going.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to scale, and I have an employee now where we have a growing stable of contractor partners that we bring in for projects. But yeah, I view Blue Kite as having a team of really high level brand strategists, and we are who you go to for building a really solid brand that's going to stand out. So I love collaborating with people. So I don't know if that will ever be super huge. I don't envision us being a really giant agency, but more of a boutique of really smart, high level strategists. That excites me. So that's where I see us going. But you know, it's all open to change. And I think that's maybe the advice or recommendation I would leave folks with is that it's okay to change, and you don't have to be locked into just because you started something. That doesn't mean that's what you have to have for the rest of your business or trajectory of your business. And so it's being okay with letting go of something that doesn't work and being open to something else that might be even better. So I'm certainly open to continuing to evolve, continuing to pivot, because if my business isn't serving me and serving my family, then what the heck am I doing here? So it needs to do those things, or it's just not something worth doing. So I have to keep those things in mind. And so if I ever get to a point where this work isn't aligned, then, you know, we'll consider what's next. But as we continue to grow and evolve, I welcome the opportunity to do it again.
Well, I have loved our podcast interview / consulting session / therapy session today. It's been amazing. And I'm sure people who are listening and feel comforted by you and just want to be close to you like I do, get to know you, tell them where they can find you. What are you working on? All the good things.
Sure. My website is flybluekite.com. So fly like a bird and then bluekite.com. We have a couple of goodies that may not be right for agency owners, but maybe their clients. We have a competitive advantage quiz, which, as I'm about to say the URL, I realize as a marketer, I should have done a better URL than this, but it's flybluekite.com/competitive-advantage. And so it's a nice downloadable quiz. So a good way to look at how can your clients stand out a little bit better. But we're also about to launch a cool brand assessment tool too. So if you just go to our website and get on our email list, you'll be the first to know. We're going to announce that to our email subscribers first. So if you're on our list, you'll be the first to hear about that new tool.
Fantastic. I wrote all of that down. I was scribbling furiously. So I'll make sure we include all of those things in the show notes. Laura, it's been awesome. I hope we get to have you back for another consulting therapy session.
I would love it. There's a reason why I often say we're like business therapists. So like we're therapy for your business. So I'm glad to do this anytime. It's fun for me. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. If you're new to the show, be sure to follow us. If you've been a longtime listener, leave us a review. I'm at Brooke Sellis on Instagram and Brooke B. Sellis on LinkedIn. And for fun, don't forget to tag @SM Examiner. Also, be sure to check out our other shows, the Social Media Marketing Podcast, and the Social Media Marketing Talk Show. This brings us to the end of this week's Marketing Agency Show. We'll catch you next week as we explore the adventures of marketing agency life.
The Marketing Agency Show is a production of Social Media Examiner.
Want more good stuff? Sign up for our top-notch social marketing newsletter. We deliver it straight into your inbox 3 days a week. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates.